So we'll call this meeting to order. You got minutes you want me to get through? Okay. Representative Nelson, did you read the minutes thoroughly?
Thoroughly, correct.
Would you care to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Very well. Representative Nelson approves the minutes of January 26th. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. Thank you. First we have House File 110. Welcome to our committee.
His first bill.
All right, way to go, what a guy.
Please help yourself.
Just to get it out of here.
Your normal Krispy Kreme, these are cream-filled chocolate covered.
Whoa!
You can't say no, so please.
Chair, I'm with the bill.
Put them down.
With calories and carbs removed?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Representative.
These are the low carb, Atkins-friendly.
Okay.
Atkins-friendly.
Okay.
Krispy Kreme, so.
Great,
too.
You are a great American.
The bar has been set very high early in the day.
Isn't that? I feel sorry for everybody else.
Please help us.
Okay. Representative Ruth moves House File 110 for possible inclusion in a bonding priority. Representative Schroem, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Yes, this is my first bill, but this, for those of you who have been members of the House, this is not the first time you're seeing this bill. As a matter of fact, I believe this is the fifth time you're seeing this very bill. The first phase of this project was first proposed and passed in 1998. The first construction on this, the first phase of this project was in the year 2000. In 2002, the final phase of this project was passed by this committee and by both chambers of our legislature, and was the unfortunate recipient of the line item veto from then Governor Ventura. The bill was then reintroduced last year and passed through this committee again and through bonding and through the House, but of course there was no Senate version, so we were unable to do the project then. So here for the fifth time we come before you with this project, a worthy project we believe. With me today is Mr. Ed Kane, a citizen who's been working on this project for several years himself, and Mayor Baudette from the city of Oak Park Heights is also here as a local official in support of this bill. I would like to turn over the testimony now to Mr. Ed Kane.
Thank you, Representative Sharon.
Welcome to the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a minor correction. Actually, even though the City of Bayport is acting as the administering agent for this project, however, it is a project by the Middle St. Croix Watershed District, which is includes quite a broad area there of townships in the City of Oak Park Heights, Bayport, Port Stillwater, portion of Stillwater, and so I just wanted to clarify. Well, it's Watershed District that is requesting the funds for this project. Just a couple of things, a reminder as to the importance of this project. This project was replacement of a storm sewer that was built nearly 100 years ago. At that time, the city of the state prison was built in 1907. At the same time, they needed water. So the process was that they dammed up some natural springs which produced 550,000 gallons of water a day. They then piped that water into the prison. The excess water was then delivered downstream into the St. Croix River through a clay pipe, sewer pipe that they had built at that time. Over the years, that pipe had disintegrated and it had to be replaced, causing some severe flooding problems in both the city of Bayport as well as in Anderson Windows and some other problems with the roadway and transportation issues of the area. So what this project first funded in 98, did the pre-engineering work. In 2000, the construction began. The pipe, new sewer line has been constructed. The basic sewer line has been constructed from the river now up to the prison pond. However, there remains some additional work that has to be done on that sewer pipe, and also there's an erosion problem that's going to have to be dealt with, and an alternate outlet to prevent the flooding during high flowage of water in the area. So that's basically what this project. I don't want to take a lot of your time. We'll be open to questions, but I would like Mayor Baudette to go ahead and make some comments about this.
Welcome to our committee, Mayor. Give your name for the record.
David Baudette, Mayor of the City of Oak Park Heights, and also a Middle St. Croix WMO board member. And as Ed had pointed out, that in the early 90s, one of the earlier phases that the local communities paid for was the replacement of the outlet structure on Peril Pond, which failed over winter and required this dike and other ancillary work to be completed. Downstream of this, of the outlet structure, is where this little piping project is going to be. It's critical for particularly the city of Bayport to relieve some localized flooding that occurs due to the nature of the outlet structure. And this is why the 10 communities of the Water Management Organization and the four communities, Stillwater, Oak Park Heights, Baytown Township, and the city of Bayport all have worked here to secure the funds so that we could eliminate this issue, this flooding issue.
Okay.
So is there, be willing to take any questions?
Any questions from the members? I think some of us are fairly familiar with it, but I think this is a project that is long overdue. And we thank you for bringing it to our attention again. And hopefully this will be, the fifth will be a charm. Thank you very much. Representative Ruth renews her motion to lay House File 110 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bonding proposal to the Capital Investment Committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank you for making my first bill so painless, although I am a little disappointed that my colleague, Representative Garofalo, did not haze me this morning.
Well, we were thinking about it, but we thought it would be nice to.
Thank you.
The donuts help.
That's right.
How's it?
Thank you.
Enjoy your good secrets.
Would you bring those?
Oh, thanks. Okay.
You're a working project.
Thank you, Senator.
House is next.
We say Mike.
19.
Yeah.
Representative House.
Done.
Huh?
I'm okay.
Representative Wilkins, you want to? Representative Wilkins moves House File 109 for possible inclusion in our bonding priorities. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Good morning. It's good to see you 2 days in a row. This project, wastewater project for Garrison Catholic Wastewater District, has been ongoing for several years. There is a little history to it. We approved $4 million back during the Ventura administration, and that was vetoed. There has been money going there a little bit since then, and there have been some legal issues that have been resolved. And so we are back here again to explain the need and the desire to do this project, and I have with me several people. I have the mayor of Garrison, chairman of the board, and also Barb Welty, clerk with Catholic Township, and she's a board member of the Garrison Catholic District, and they would like to explain their situation to you.
Go ahead. Which one would like to start?
Okay. I'm Darren Fry, mayor of the city of Garrison, and also chairman of the board of managers of the Garrison Cathy Wesselmack Sanitary District. A little bit of history. Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to be here to speak today. And secondly, a little bit of history of the formation of the district after a need study that determined the threat to the welfare of our lakes and ground source aquifer, our water supply, was real. A feasibility study was done to determine the best way to solve the problem. Therefore, on June 25th, 1999, through a petition to the MPCA, the district was formed by the MPCA. A 30-day comment period was provided previous to the actual formation, and there were only a few objections, not enough to warrant a public hearing to reconsider. Since then, the project has gained a lot of support. Therefore, because of delays that we have incurred, the costs have increased. Therefore, we are asking for an additional $1.5 million from the WIF fund to defray the additional costs. And do you have any questions or anything?
Any questions from members?
Pardon me?
Mr. Chair, does Nate testify, does Nate the lakes around that corner?
Pardon?
Will this help the lake water quality?
Yes. And also our groundwater. We have to protect our groundwater because we have a single source aquifer. And if that gets in trouble, we are in trouble. And also, this will help clean up not only the west shore of Mille Lacs Lake, but other lakes that are joining it.
How about the traffic on Friday?
We're working on that one.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions. Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly remember this, you know, being around for quite some time, like you said, Representative House. As far as this particular project, its ranking on the PFA list, has it changed over the 4 years, or do you know where it's at, or...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westberg, I don't know where it is on the list, but I'm sure there's someone coming down.
Thank you.
You hear those footsteps.
Welcome to our committee again.
Be careful with the ass. No, it's one of the top five projects on our list, and the only thing missing, there's two components missing. One, we need state match so we can make a loan for this project for $6.5 million. And then there's a gap, I think, from an affordability standpoint, which this bill plugs. So.
Okay.
And it's ready to go. They're already starting construction on part of it.
That's good to know.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a few comments I would like to make as well.
Good. Would you give your name for the record?
I'm Barbara Welty, clerk of Cathia Township, a member of the Board of Managers as well. Mr. Chairman, Representative Powell, and members of the committee, I want to thank you, first of all, for allowing us to come before you today and to tell you why this bill is so very important to us. I am a member of the Board of Managers and... currently the treasurer of the sewer district, and we have been working on this project, as you've heard, for a very long time. I've been fortunate to live on one of Mille Lacs' gems for 50 years, Mille Lacs Lake, and I am an elected township official in Cathia Township in Mille Lacs County. I served as their clerk for 20 years. When this project started, there was a lot of questions, concerns, and naysayers who were out there. I can say very truthfully now that there are very, very few of those left. There have been bad feelings that existed, and with the exception of a very few, that no longer does occur. Most of the people in the area know that in order to maintain this gem, that we need to take care of the sewage that the growth is now generating, and we are growing rapidly. We have worked, Board of Managers and others, very hard to try to keep the cost as minimal as possible for our residents. This is a project that is looking at nationally as a project, model project, I guess I would say, because of the government entities that are included in it. There are two counties, two townships, a city, and a band that are included in this whole project. So, like I say, nationally, they are looking at that. We have obtained federal funding, which requires a local match. We have some state funding, and we also have the local assessments and charges that we as residents will be paying over the years and for our initial assessments. This is all done to maintain the quality of our lake and lands in the area we are serving. The first phase of the sewer district will hopefully be up and operating by this June, and we are all looking very much forward to that. The next phase of this will be the area in which I live, and again, hopefully by the end of this year, that will be up and running. That will take care of the first 3 miles, but we still have another 5 miles to go. So you see the scope of this project and why we are urging you to help us along by approving this bill. I think that's all I have, but I do want to thank you once again, and I will answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none. Offer the motion. Representative Wilkins renews his motion to have House File 109 put in the bonding priorities of this committee. Now, we appreciate your testimony very much.
Thank you.
Sounds like you're really ready to go this time. Thank you.
Job's right away, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kelleher's next. Representative Kelleher, you ready?
Okay,
a couple. I hope you're ready. If you aren't, say so. You okay? We're moving right along today.
Okay.
We will do that. This is another project we've seen before.
Yes.
How many times have we seen this project?
Mr. Chairman, I think I have done this presentation at least 5 or 6 times. So.
This certainly is not. Is this still the highest priority of your city? Number one, right?
It's the number one priority. There are 4, 5 priorities. I think you'll be hearing most of them today.
Okay. Representative Clark, would you like to move this?
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair, definitely.
Okay.
House file.
Representative Clark moves House File 239 for possible inclusion.
239, excuse me.
In our bonding priorities.
Oh, never mind.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much. I want to thank the members of the committee. Many of them are co-authors of the bill, and as are you, so thank you very much. I'm here to present House File 239 this morning, and we will be brief because many members are familiar with the project, and we are happy to talk further with members who want more information about it. Today I have with me Park Kunkel, who is chair of the Minnesota Planetarium Society and also a professor at the Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and does a terrific job there as well as with the Planetarium Society. I want to acknowledge, as we're still waiting for the presentation to load, that in the audience today we have several members of the Minneapolis City Council. Some of them are here specifically for this project. Others are here on other projects, but I'm going to acknowledge them right now. Council member Scott Benson, who is the chair of the Intergovernment Relations Committee, if you'll just wave your hand. Council member Lisa Goodman, who is my council member and also council member for the area that includes the planetarium. And council member Robert Lilligren, who I believe is here mainly for the Sears site, but the city supports all of these projects, so we're pleased to have them in the audience today.
Welcome.
Okay. Are we close?
Yes.
All right, we're very close. Mr. Chairman and committee members, this project is about three things. This project is about education, innovation, and is really about expanding minds in science. And I know that's an interesting fit here in this committee. We have been in many different committees over the years, sometimes the education committee, sometimes here. But we are happy to have a home, and we found a home here in jobs and economic development. The project, and I'll let Park do the presentation in a second, is really more than just a Minneapolis project. And I think that's one of the most important things that you can know about this project. Of the folks who come to visit, I believe the figure is 90% come from outside of the borders of Minneapolis when kids and adults come to visit the planetarium. Right now, of course, sadly, they cannot visit a planetarium because the Planetarium had a 53-year partnership with the Minneapolis Public Library. The Planetarium building was part of the library building, and as we went to referendum to build a brand new downtown Minneapolis Public Library, the issue came up of how to deal with the Planetarium. We, in consultation with many people here at the legislature several years ago, because of those figures of 90% of people coming from outside of Minneapolis, clearly this is a statewide facility and would be the major public planetarium in the state of Minnesota. There are other planetaria in the state, as Representative Sertich knows, but they are much smaller, and actually we have served as a hub for educational information to those planetaria around the state as well. So I'm going to let Park begin, and we'll wait for questions.
Thank you, Representative Keller. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Appreciate the opportunity. Of course, we do want to tell you why we should have a planetarium. As Representative Kelleher suggested, we want to educate our young children. We want to inspire all Minnesotans. We want to promote innovation by showcasing our Minnesota companies. I'll get back to that in just a second. And we want to create a statewide wow. From the education viewpoint, I'd like to pass along a sample here to you. This is a meteorite that fell in Arizona several tens of thousands of years ago. It's about 4.5 billion years old. It was originally the size of a bus, created a hole in the Arizona desert that's about 4/5 of a mile across. And this is the kind of thing, as you feel that, this is the kind of thing we can bring to our children here in Minnesota. This is the kind of thing that really excites them. Would you like the mayor to speak at this point?
The mayor's here for support.
Okay,
I will acknowledge my city mayor, Mayor R.P. Rybeck, who's joined us here at the table today.
And speaking of inspiration, in terms of education, we anticipate conservatively we'll have 150,000 students visiting the planetarium a year. I think in terms of reaching science education, physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics, technology, this is a great way to do it. This is a really exciting opportunity. We want to inspire all Minnesotans. How many times have you heard reach for the stars? Seems to be a real inspiration, I think, especially for kids, but for Minnesotans in general, too. Stargazing just seems to fuel from everything from poetry to physics. So we think it's a very exciting opportunity. Some of the pictures you're seeing up here, for example, the second one down is a picture of Titan, where you're seeing oceans, perhaps lakes of liquid methane, and what looks like a riverbed there is liquid methane that's flowing on the surface there at 290 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. It's not cold here in Minnesota. We'd like to promote innovation by showcasing our Minnesota companies. NASA, for example, in the space race, developed many of the remote sensing technologies that we have today. How do you keep track of an astronaut on the moon? You've got to know what his heartbeat and his respiration rates are. That kind of technology was all developed by NASA, and we're now seeing a lot of it in our companies like Medtronic, for example. So we want to highlight those. And we want to create a statewide wow. We want people from all over Minnesota to come to this wonderful facility. Sorry about that. Went too fast there. Let's back up a step. Part of our education, of course, is going to be centered on the Minnesota State Science Standards, which this body helped pass last year. Here's just a sampling of some of those kinds of things. You can see the solar system, the universe, the history of science, the process of science in there. So all the lessons we're going to be producing will be centered on the Minnesota State Science Standards. And speaking of inspiration, here's somebody you may be familiar with, Pinky Nelson, Minnesota's only astronaut, grew up in Wilmer, Minnesota. And excitingly enough, the first planetarium opened in Minnesota in 1950. The second one opened in 1961, and Pinky was in the audience opening day. This is the one that was torn down, thank you, was torn down just recently. But he was there opening day. This inspired him to go on to be an astronaut and a professor in astronomy. But even more so, he mentions that planetariums are even more important today because 95% of Minnesotans cannot see the Milky Way anymore. our light pollution has gotten so bad, 95% of us can't see the Milky Way. That's just amazing to me. So I think these planetariums become even more important. Here's a slide indicating our 90% of people coming from outside Minneapolis to come to the Minneapolis Planetarium, Minnesota Planetarium. By the way, we'll be passing around a packet. This is in that packet, so you can see where people come from. In terms of some finances here, the city of Minneapolis has already put in about $9 million for infrastructure, for parking, and various costs, construction costs. We'll be raising $10 million privately. That campaign is being led by Stanley Hubbard and Pinky Nelson. Both have agreed to be our chair. And we're asking the legislature for $25.5 million to finish the project. That is also in the packet. We'll be one of Minnesota's most technologically advanced facilities, education facilities. That's our goal. And where are we going to put it? We're scheduled to build on top of the new Minneapolis Public Library. You can see construction here. That picture is about a week old, so the library is coming along very nicely. And in the upper right, you can see our vision for adding another floor and adding the dome on top of that. 37,000 square feet. If we're funded this time, we think with an aggressive construction schedule, we can open in the fall of 2007. What are we going to put in it? Marvelous fiber optic star projector. So here we can now show Minnesotans what the sky really looks like without all the light pollution. Those 95% of Minnesotans can finally see the Milky Way. We'll be able to see 200 people in that dome. In addition, we'll have a all-dome laser video projection system. Imagine now flying through the Orion Nebula. This is a big gas cloud out in space. And all those little blobs you're seeing there, nice scientific term, blobs, right? All those little blobs you're seeing there are stars that are in the process of forming. So we can actually fly through this, but imagine now a dome surrounding you as you're flying through here. So you go up to see this newly forming star here, and inside it, this is real data, by the way, inside it you see these jets coming out from those stars and the disk of material around the stars. That's where planets are forming in those areas. This is inspiring stuff, especially for kids of all ages, actually. We also want to have a North Star Observatory, and in that observatory, we'll have interactive exhibits. So a second grader, for example, could come in at 11 o'clock in the morning, hook up to a telescope live connected to Australia, where it's dark, it's about midnight, and do some stargazing. Look at Saturn, for example. We'll have a live Earth globe projecting the weather from all over the world. So you look at this globe, you could see a tornado, hopefully not in Minnesota. We'll see blue skies in Minnesota. You could see a hurricane in the Caribbean. You could see various weather phenomena, a cyclone in the Indian Ocean, for example, live. We'll have a holodeck facility where this is a virtual environment where we could, for example, show you what it's like to be on the surface of Mars. We'll have a space exposition hall. Here we could have travel exhibits from NASA, for example. Or we could do a product opening for a corporation.
Question?
Yeah. And then once people have seen the stars simulated, we'll take them up on the roof, show them the moon and planets, and in the evening sky, and in the daytime we can show them the sun, but of course you've got to look carefully at the sun, so we'll make sure that we filter them appropriately with these glasses. And aside from looking really cool in these things, you'll be able to do that. Now, we'll have a set of these for you in your packet.
Could Representative Kelleher put those on, please?
Yeah, yeah.
Could the photographer?
I think the tag was ready.
I think this is the price of a few million dollars, right, Representative? I can't believe I'm going to do this for you.
Oh, they're not going to take any pictures, don't worry.
I find this is really
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm a bit of upset with Kayla Harrison. Don't worry, Mahoney will be in front of this committee and I'll make him do something for you too later.
I'd be here for that.
Representative Bravo has got a question too.
Oh, well, House Research actually was asking me if the holodeck was actually from Star Trek. The
it is very similar to that kind of thing. The walls and ceiling a bit disappear, and we can then simulate some interesting environments. By the way, I'm
never
dreamed
that a girl from Mankato would be asking for all this.
Well, Mr. Chair, I had a planetarium in Mankato East High School, so the Crosstown High School, and we did take a trip or two there, but I think it's an amazing thing. We'll get back to that.
First and foremost, we always thought everybody in Mankato had all advantages, and we knew the people in Minneapolis did. Go ahead.
Beautiful. And so we want to point out that we're really a statewide resource for this. We want to distribute high-quality science lessons all tied to the Minnesota State Science Standards. We want to link our schools to any kind of live event. So if there's an eclipse going on, for example, in Africa, we can bring that not only to the planetarium, but also send that out to the various schools around the state. And we want to provide Minnesota-specific sky-watching information. For example, right now there's a comet out relatively near the Pleiades, and we want to get that information out to schools so they know where to look. And so we'd like to first thank you for your support, and secondly, ask you to help educate and inspire our children of all ages. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Slough, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Kelleher, the testifiers, you know, I didn't grow up in Mankato or Minnesota, for that matter. And where I did grow up, we had a very famous planetarium, but it was very closely connected to the university. Mm-hmm. And the university did their research with the planetarium. The university also picked up a lot of the funding for the planetarium. So that was one of my questions, is kind of, do you have a connection with a university, or specifically University of Minnesota? And then second, because I grew up where there were telescopes out in the middle of the desert and so forth, isn't there a lot of light pollution in downtown Minneapolis? I mean, you telescopes in downtowns, and that doesn't all mix. So if you could answer those two things, right?
Sure, be glad to, and good questions as well. In the University of Minnesota connection, one of our major board members is a professor in astronomy at the University of Minnesota. And what NASA is doing now with their grants, when you get a research grant, each research grant has a component that's an outreach, an educational outreach portion of that. And what the university has said is that we will be their portion of, we will do the outreach for them. And so in that way, the university is then helping fund what's going on here.
Mr. Chair, but do they have an astronomy program? And is the astronomers going to come over and all that type of thing?
Yes, they do have an astronomy program. They have a major as well as a graduate major in astronomy. Okay. And many of the beginning level astronomy classes come over to the planetarium to look at the simulated sky and to help their students learn. Primarily, actually, those are the liberal arts students that are coming over to learn about the sky. So, yes, they are using it. Right, and then MNSCU is the other, of course, big educator in the state, and I take my classes down there all the time, and we're working now on developing other opportunities for MNSCU schools as well. Right. And let's see, the second part of your question was the light pollution one, which is a good one. And so, Mr. Chair, may we answer that? In terms of the light pollution, the idea of the planetarium is to simulate the sky. And so what we're doing is projecting on a dome inside, so we don't have to be swatting mosquitoes and things like that. And in terms of the rooftop observatory from downtown, you're absolutely right. The only thing we can see is the sun, the moon, and a few planets. And I think that's why we really need the planetarium, is because so many people cannot see the sky anymore. And so it's probably a better place to put it downtown, where no one can see the sky anymore.
Representative Slough.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, are there any other telescopes? Are there big major telescopes in Minnesota somewhere?
There are no big major telescopes, no. Okay. There are a few amateur organizations that are that do some sky watching. For example, the Minnesota Astronomical Society has a facility at Baylor Regional Park. out near Norwood Young America. There's another smaller one in Cherry Grove. And they do occasional public sky watchings about once a month. But that's about the size of it.
Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney.
Every time you bring your little 8 and 9 and 10-year-old children out there, they go, how come it took us so long to get here? Is this all there is? I've only done it about a dozen times.
It is. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that our time is about up here. I wanted to tell you that what inspired me to be so involved in this project, because it actually is not in my district, but it is a project that, you know, growing up on the farm, we had a great night sky view. I could lay out on the front lawn, or we'd be out in the field and you could lay back and watch whatever you wanted to in the sky. That's not the case anymore in Minnesota because of light pollution. And I took a trip myself on my own dime about 5 years ago where I visited the Rose Center in New York City. And when I went to that planetarium and sat in the theater that will be similar in terms of the technology that we would have here, it was truly amazing. You could sit with a pair of binoculars and look at that night sky and go deeper and deeper into it. And it truly was an amazing, amazing experience and really inspired me to think about lots of questions that both were science related as well as sort of place in the universe and all those sorts of things. And so I think if it can inspire someone like me, I think it can really get the attention of the 10-year-olds and the 7-year-olds, which are the ages of my children right now. And I was struck by when we saw that Pinky Nelson slide. Right now I have a 10-year-old boy, and I think about how we keep those kids engaged in science and keep those kids engaged in moving forward with school so that they want to achieve highly. This is one small piece of that that I think we can touch a lot of lives and really get kids excited. So thank you so much for your time today, and we are happy anytime to answer questions about the project. We're going to pass out the folder at the end, and you too will have a set of the cool. Thanks.
Try to wait till after the committee hearing is over with before you come.
And when the photographer has left the room.
Thank you very much. Any other questions from members? We appreciate it. And I think Representative Clark moved that, right?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Representative Clark renews her motion to have House File 239 be laid over for possible inclusion in our bonding priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a chance, Mayor. You can say something. I've never seen a politician that's turned on.
Just very quickly, I want to just say we appreciate the openness people have had to this project. It's been our number one priority for several sessions running. We have a very significant local match on this. And in addition to that, we are putting this on top of the library, so land, parking, infrastructure is all there. Finally, I just want to say, like many people in this room, I'm a kid. You're looking pretty good there. Well, just in conclusion, I wanted to say, like many people in this room, I'm a kid who grew up in the Sputnik era, where I think this whole country looked up in the sky and saw a great challenge. And that challenge led us to inspire our next generation to move forward. Pinky Nelson, but many, many others who did that. And we have a similar challenge right now. We as a state, I think, need to look up in the sky and say that we need to go further and further. And we can. And what we need to do is to inspire and excite our children. This is very much about science education and inspiration. So I hope the next generation will have the luck that we've had with your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next we have Representative Zellers with House File 283.
I'm going to go. Don't wear these while you're driving. You can't see a thing.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, every committee member has copied that picture. Yeah.
Welcome to our committee, Representative Zellers. Representative Gravelo moves House File 283 to be included in our bonding priorities for this session.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the move down one on the calendar. I
unfortunately was caught in the Lowry Tunnel accident and not a part of it, but was there is a jaws of life. We're coming for one of the victims, so I apologize for my delinquency. I'm going to be just brief on why I'm sponsoring this bill and let Kim Moltz, who is with me from the... No fair wearing the glasses. Who's here with me from the Schubert Theater. She's the director. As Representative McKelleher said, I'm not from the Minneapolis area. This isn't in my district. It is not actually close to my district. It's quite some ways away. But when I talked with Kim, when I talked with a couple of other advocates for the project, I grew up on a farm in the middle of North Dakota, very, very long ways from a lot of art, a lot of culture, a lot of just about anything, mm-hmm. let alone some of the things that you'll see here today. My grandmother began teaching in a one-room schoolhouse and was a teacher for 42 years. And as I was growing up, she always made sure to tell us to expand our horizons, look for new things. Even if you can't be there, you can read about it, you can see about it, you can look... look at pictures, you can educate yourself. You don't have to stay out here in the middle of nowhere and not know what the world around you is like. So when Kim and I spoke about this project, and you look at some of the opportunities for schools and for the educational aspect around the state, to me, one of the greatest parts of this project is the access via the statewide interactive educational program. Kids in all areas of the state. You can see by our map, I think it's coming around to you right now, some of the pilot schools. I won't go through them, let you just look at the handout. Some of the pilot schools we're going to work with, and I think it's a good representation of all four corners of our state, as well as some of the other groups that are going to be working along with them. And as some of our more conservative members of our caucus looked at this, they looked at and saw some of the funding mechanisms. I personally would like to put the arts and education aspect in front, but for those members who are more concerned about that, you'll notice that 32% comes from the state of Minnesota and 68% is from matching funds. You'll see on there that for every dollar the state puts in, private funds will go in and match for $2.08. To me, this is not only a wonderful educational opportunity for a number of our students in communities around the state, not only here in the Minneapolis metropolitan area, but also in greater Minnesota as well. So I thank you for the time today, and turn over to Kim Moltz, who is the director of the Schubert Theater.
Thanks. I feel like this morning, since we were looking at the stars, we should all get up and dance or sing this morning, but I won't make you do that.
Kim, will you give your name for the record?
Kim Moltz, director of the Minnesota Schubert Performing Arts and Education Center.
We all know you're here, but we'll know it 100 years from now.
Okay, thank you. Well, the Minnesota Schubert Center is a new three-building complex which will provide rehearsal, education, administrative, and performance space for more than 20 of Minnesota's arts organizations. The center includes the Hennepin Center for the Arts, which is a rehearsal and administrative building which currently serves 100,000 students and adults who take classes and attend performances there right now. The Schubert Theater, a 1,000-seat double balcony configured theater, very intimate, no seat is further than 60 feet from the stage. And it provides perfect sight lines for dance and superior acoustics for music groups such as the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, our anchor music tenant, and a newly constructed stage house that will provide optimum backstage space so that artists can present their best work. The Nerve Center is the atrium building, the middle building, which is the entrance point for the facility for the more than 300,000 people that will attend over 205 performances and events in the first year of the facility. It also includes ample lobby space, and including an elevator to make it ADA compliant and up to today's occupancy codes. Occupancy codes were different in 1910 when the theater was built. It houses the heating and cooling and other mechanical systems for the facility. It provides audience amenity space such as box office, coat check, and ample restrooms. It includes a secure child drop-off area so that parents feel safe when they drop their kids off for programs at the facility, and provides additional earned revenue sources for the facility with an event center and cafe concession area, which helps the building cash flow positive in terms of operations. From an economic development standpoint, currently there's little revenue being contributed back. It's basically a dark, empty block sitting on Hennepin Avenue and sitting right where the LRT line currently stops. When the facility is open, we anticipate that it will contribute back annually to area businesses $11 million each year.
It will add to the significant public investments that the state and the city and local business owners have made. And the most important component really is our arts education program. Our 20 arts partners provide really wonderful arts education programs, but they're limited by their reach, primarily being the Twin Cities. And with the new standards of learning, there's an arts requirement to that, and schools, as you probably know, are struggling to see how they can meet those new standards. And the arts tend to be one of the first things that they look to cut. We are outfitting the building technologically so that the programs that are happening at the Schubert can be shared with schools across the state. Using web-based technology, so the schools have the internet connections, they have the computers, they just need the free and accessible programs. We've had three appropriations from the U.S. Department of Education, thanks to Congressman Szabo and Senator Coleman, so that we've been able to actually begin this work, begin working in communities. And last year, we were able to work in Fergus Falls, Lanesboro, and Thief River Falls. And, for example, in Fergus Falls, we were able to have a St. Paul Chamber Orchestra world-class percussionist introduce percussion instruments to second and fourth graders at Cleveland Elementary School. In real time, interactively, they could ask questions, he responded. They would have never had this opportunity to have this kind of a musician in their community without this kind of a program. So we're very excited about the possibilities so that we can reach Fairmont and Owatonna and even Chisholm, and all kids will be able to have the accessible programs in their communities. We have a different financial story to tell, I think, than most other bonding projects. We've already raised $12 million towards the $37 million total project cost, and we're asking the state to provide $12 million in bonding support, which is less than a third of the cost. The state investment will help us leverage the remaining dollars needed so that we can break ground this year and open the facility in early 2007. In addition to design, construction, and skilled labor jobs that will be created in the building phase of the project, we will also create permanent full and part-time jobs to operate the new facility. In closing, I'd like to challenge you to find another bonding project with that kind of public-private match. We're not asking for dollar one, and we're not coming to you for all of the money. Thank you very much. Be happy to take any questions.
Any questions? You must have done a wonderful job of presenting everything. Nobody has a question. Mr. Gazelle,
yes,
Representative.
Just because you needed a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once it's up and running, how does it cash flow? Is there, as far as people paying for tickets and that, does it have enough in there to pay for its operating expenses?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gazelka, yes, there is an operating plan that we have for the first year facility, and it is rental income from the arts groups using the facility, the ticket charges, the earned revenue, the for-profit rental that will go into the event center helps keep the rents affordable for the arts groups as well. It's really about creating an affordable venue for small to mid-sized arts organizations. And then it's, you know, concessions and a whole variety of income sources.
Yeah. Representative Saul.
Mr. Chair, you know, I had a question, Representative Zellers, or to the testifier. I had a question about the cost. When you came in 2004, it was for $10 million. And now you're asking for, I think, $12 million. So it's gone up about 20% in a year. And can you tell us why?
Sure, Mr. Chairman and Representative Slawick. We actually, after hearing the state of Minnesota finance department talk about construction costs going up 11.63% last year, we had not recost the program in several years. And we looked at that and said, boy, we should look at how, we should recost the construction phase. And we did see a slight increase, so we went from $34.5 million to $37 million in terms of total project costs. And so we did raise that ratio, keeping in line with that percentage, the less than a third of the cost for the state contribution.
Good question and good answer. No other questions?
I think Mayor Ryback would like to say something.
This is your day.
I'm just a supporting cast, but two very quick points I wanted to call your attention to. Kim did a very good mention of where this sits. We now have people from around the state and really around the region coming in on the light rail line, and this sits right at that terminus, and so it provides great access for folks from all over the metropolitan area. But the second point I wanted to underscore, as I think you can hear here, there has been a remarkable group of folks who've come together behind this project, from the funding community, that they've raised a significant amount of money, but they've also, the capacity of the group that's putting this together has really impressed me as one that's taken very, very seriously this charge that these are statewide projects that need to come before your group. They've done a remarkable amount of work in tying together with groups throughout the state, and I think that's going to be part of the success of this project. This project will not fail. Our organizations have tough sledding right now, but they have tremendous capacity in the funding area and in just the people who are putting this together, Kim, all the way through the food chain. So I think people should pay attention to how much progress they've made and the extraordinary outreach they've made throughout the state. Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Actually, I have a question for Mayor Ryback, if you could come back to the... Mr. Chair, Mayor Ryback, could you answer... Has the city of Minneapolis contributed any monies to this particular project, and if so, how much?
Yes, the city of Minneapolis has stabilized this building and has spent, help me remember. $4.3
million
to stabilize the building.
And Mr. Chair, for Representative Zeller, of the $25 million that has been raised, you said $12 million was raised. And is that $4 million part of the $12 million?
Yes, that's the total raised to date. So that includes private and other sources, so city and federal money.
Then that raises another question. How much of the $12 million raised has been private versus public?
It is approximately $7.75 million.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Representative Groff will remove his motion to have House File 283 put out a bond in priorities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. Representative Rokovina, welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chair, I've got a pair of glasses for him.
We all would love to have him put those glasses on and take a picture.
He doesn't have a donut.
Sure, I can see it. I'm going to catch the back of my hand before he leaves.
Representative Sertich moves that House File 117 be considered for our bonding priority of this session.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pleasure to be here again so quickly and twice in two, once each week. I think I have another cell coming up here, I hope.
We'll look forward to it.
You know, it's always a pleasure to be here, Mr. Chair. And this is a project that you've seen before in this committee. I believe there's a handout that staff, I don't know if it's in your packet, but the City of Virginia has... one of the largest central steam heating systems in the world. They've got about 2,000 homes and businesses online. It was much bigger at one time, but it's been downsized for recently in the last 5 years or so for efficiency purposes. Virginia has a power plant, as you know, because we had that project here last year. And then with the steam created by their turbines, they heat the community. If you look at the pictures in the handout, on the last three or so pages, you'll see, you know, I guess it saves on snow removal, but you'll see that we have steam coming up from a number of the different collection boxes that are on the steam lines all around the community. Virginia, if you turn to the second page of that, you'll also note that Virginia sits in a river valley and is surrounded by three active mines that blast once a week. And the the impact on the infrastructure, specifically on these steam lines, has been significant. And so, you know, the city has been, over the last 5 years or so, putting in about $1 million a year into improving the system. They also have imposed a surcharge on the residents of the city, $39 a month for 12 months of the year, on my mother's steam heat, I might add, Mr. Leone, and it's a little more for the businesses and the community to improve and fund this system. But what we're asking here is for a $5 million request. The city is also asking the federal government through Representative Oberstar's office, I believe, for $23 million. As I said, Mr. Chair, they've done significant improvements over the years and over the last few years, and we'd really appreciate any help you can give us because, you know, this is a very environmentally efficient system, and if we don't correct it, it's going to put another 2,000 homes and businesses on fossil fuels instead of this project, the project right now. I mean, it's a waste process, and it's heating our community. So I'd appreciate your support, and I don't know if Mr. Leone wants to add anything. He's the director of the public utility system in Virginia and was here last week on the biomass projects. Mr. Leone.
Welcome to our committee again, Mr. Leone.
Mr. Chair, Terry Leone, General Manager of the Virginia Public Utility. I think Representative Rukavina covered all of the points that are out there. I'd like to highlight on a few. I'm excited to be here today. I'm not as flashy and maybe not as much needed as a planetarium or a theater, but again, we're talking about basic infrastructure here. And why this is so important to the city of Virginia, but why it should be important to the state of Minnesota, is I believe every city in the state of Minnesota would love to have a system like we have here in Virginia, like Hibbing, like New Ulm, like Wilmer, like Rochester.
This is downtown St. Paul.
This is a very efficient system. It's cogeneration. It cuts at the very heart of the national energy policy that's out there. It cuts at the heart of what the state of Minnesota is trying to do. And when you can create this cogeneration, it becomes very efficient, especially today in light of the prices of natural gas. So again, what we're asking here for is to improve our infrastructure, especially in light of the biomass project, which you heard from us last week on. If we can put our system and make it even more efficient and repair the infrastructure that's out there, I think it will serve us for the next 50 years. As one little paragraph in this points out, the expected life of a system like this is 50 years. We've been operating since 1922. We have 20 miles of main pipe in the ground, and we have 18 miles of service line to the homes and businesses in the community. So you can see it's an overwhelming project. It requires money to be put towards it every year. In the last 4 years, we've put close to $7 million into it. This year, we've budgeted another $600,000. So we are matching exactly or more than what we're asking the state for. And more importantly, regardless of whether we get funding or not, it's something that we're going to have to continue to put money into because it's that important to our community and it's that important to energy conservation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Fairmont has something like that too, and I remember those areas where the steam leaks would melt the snow.
No, we've got good steam leaks, Mr. Chair.
Do you have questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. For the testifiers, just one question as far as, in reading through this here, it sounds like the city's built on a in a really bad location. I mean, is this a problem that eventually can be solved, or is this something that's going to be ongoing forever and ever, and, you know, you'd be better off moving the whole city? I mean,
well, Mr. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westerberg, we've moved many cities on the Iron Range to get at the ore. This was put there because there wasn't any ore under you know, this river valley. But no, it's the city itself is in a good location, surrounded by the hills of the Laurentian Divide, or the Continental Divide. I think Mr. Kazalka went to school in Virginia, as a matter of fact, and is married to my neighbor's daughter, who's a good Democrat, but that's another story. But anyway,
we will all pray for her.
So it's in the right place. It's just that the impact of the mining really does have a toll on this infrastructure. But I think the new process that they're using should be able to withhandle those blasts that we see. And I think it will sustain the system, hopefully, for another half a century.
Thank you.
Representative Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rukavina. He's smoozing me already, but I'm surprised they asked me to co-author this one as well. But
I didn't want to hurt your election chances.
I actually toured this plant when I was in high school, and I thought it was too old then. And so my question is, I'm amazed that you guys have made it last as long as it has, and will that truly continue to be efficient, and will you be regularly asking for money just to keep it up? And that would be my concern, because I think the steam heat is effective as long as we can keep the plant running.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the biomass project that we talked about last week gives us a lease on life to fully utilize the electrical generating portion of our facility. And again, the steam generation then goes hand in hand with the electrical generation. What I've been asking for since 2000 is a shot in the arm to help us get the infrastructure up to a point where we can efficiently take it over. The biomass project in itself will be the panacea that will carry us forward in allowing us to do the major repairs. The pro forma, the business model that's built around the biomass project allows us not to come back here every year asking for your help, but allows us to do our own work in our own community going forward.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Gazelka might add that the turbines, they've got updated gas turbines, coal turbines also that they can switch to in the electrical part of the plant. But if you can see on the first page, I believe, of the handout, the repairs that they've done now, and modern technology, modern piping, much different than what was in that ground almost 100 years ago. I think it'd be much improved and last a lot longer than it did in the past. So.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the committee and to the testifiers. Having worked on a number of steam projects in my lifetime, this is a good particular project in the sense that it distributes the heat and does a good job of heating. It's energy efficient most of the time. Most steam plants actually have to do, they budget in their maintenance, and they're every 7 to 12 years. In every steam plant I've ever worked in, you, for all intents and purposes, rebuilt the whole plant. So, and they budget in a dollar figure for that kind of maintenance. This is pretty much an industry standard, and I can't remember the particular number. Do you know it, and are you meeting that particular industry standard maintenance every year?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know what that number is, but I can tell you that every 5 years, because of what we're regulated to do by our insurance standards, we're required to tear down every one of our boilers, every one of our turbines. We have three turbines on our site. We have two coal-fired turbines, we have one gas-fired turbine, and every 5 years we're required to go through those. So with six of those components out there, we're into a major overhaul every year that's in excess of $400,000. It's unfortunate that we haven't paid that much attention to our piping distribution system on the same regularity that we have. There is no regulatory or no industry standard for that. Again, we're playing some catch-up here, but more importantly, I think it's the money that we've put in the last few years shows our commitment to doing that and keeping the system viable for the long term.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Maloney, you know this whole issue a lot better than me as far as, what these structures, how you maintain them and that. But the city did implement that surcharge I talked about just a few years ago, and As an example, I know, you know, my mother not only pays her steam bill for the usage on her meter, but also pays about $480 a year on her residential for a surcharge to keep it up and maintain it also.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Sertich renews his motion to have House File 117 be included in our bonding priorities for the session. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Cindy.
Yeah, okay. Representative Clark.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay, did you know that? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask some folks to join me here at the desk.
Very well.
And Representative Anita Walker is one of them.
Members, I will move House File, where is it? You can move it yourself, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 343, be recommended for incorporation into the capital improvement bill.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm really happy to be here today. I guess I should claim my farm risk that's been happening all morning, so I'll do that. But I'm one of those farm kids who ended up in the inner city in South Minneapolis. And one of the things that a lot of you may have done over the years is patronize the Sears store in South Minneapolis, either by the catalog or by actually going there. And when that closed, we've been now on a 10-year effort to try to redevelop that site. It's an incredible building structure. It's a mega site, and there's a great opportunity to invest in it here in this committee to make sure that we can do the kind of economic development and housing. It's just a fabulous mixed use that's being proposed, and we've been working on this, like I say, for about the last 10 years, but we need in this bill to put in $5 million that would help us do some of the infrastructure work. This is a building that had asbestos and lead and all kinds of challenges. It's been designated historic and federal and state historic site, which again brings additional requirements in terms of construction. So the main thing, though, that I think might be of interest to this community is that we want to get at the jobs and the economic development, the entrepreneurial opportunities that this bonding request would help us provide. And so we have some people who want to testify, and Representative Walker is here with me. She can say a word if she wants to. I guess we'll go ahead and let our witnesses testify, but let me just say that this building is located right on the border of our two districts, and we both feel that the kinds of jobs and economic opportunities there are really, really important to the people in the inner city that we represent. Mr. Smith, introduce yourself.
Would you please give your name for the record? Good morning. My name is Lewis Smith, and I'm here before you on behalf of the Phillips Partnership, for whom I serve as counsel. Mr. Chairman and members, it's a pleasure to be here before you this morning. I want to speak briefly about the Phillips neighborhood, about the Phillips Partnership, and then also why this project in the Sears Building is so critical to the future of our collective interests. The Phillips neighborhood, if I were to ask each of you to name a single neighborhood in the city of Minneapolis, I'm willing to bet that many of you would be able to name Phillips. I also fear that it would be for unfortunate reasons, because the history in Phillips is a great mix of challenges and opportunities. In the mid-1990s, when we were at the peak of homicides in Minneapolis, nearly half of them were occurring in the Phillips neighborhood. And even today, whereas the city of Minneapolis has an unemployment rate of 4.9%, in Phillips it's over 12%. Whereas in Minneapolis, 12% of our families are living in poverty, 32% of the families in Phillips still live in poverty. And so we continue to be plagued with the challenges of drugs, crime, and poverty. It is fair to say that any discussion of poverty in Minnesota will get to the Phillips neighborhood. And so there is a great deal to be concerned about, but there's also a great deal to be inspired about as well. The Phillips Partnership was created in 1997 as a response to many of these challenges at a time when the private corporate presence in Phillips was in jeopardy. Many of the larger institutions were thinking about moving their facilities out in the face of these problems. Instead, they got together and decided to commit to a long-term agenda of investing and mobilizing resources along a community-defined set of priorities.
The Phillips Partnership today is comprised of the CEOs of Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, Abbott Northwestern Hospital, Children's Hospital, the Phillips Eye Institute, the Minneapolis Foundation, and Ryan Companies. And here today in the audience is Rick Collins on behalf of Ryan Companies. Our public partners include the mayor of Minneapolis, with whom I believe you are familiar, Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin, and the head of Metro Transit, Brian Lamb. This public-private partnership, then, has worked over the last 7 years along the lines of safety, jobs, housing, and infrastructure. We have trained over 650 Phillips residents in the largest hospital-based jobs training program in the United States. We have created a campus in which over 2,000 students have taken health careers, college-level training for career advancement. And so we have greatly opened up the job opportunities in the hospitals to the Phillips neighborhood. Also, these institutions, these private institutions together, have invested $600 million in their own private facilities, including the Wells Fargo Home Mortgage Campus, the Abbott Northwestern New Heart Hospital, the expansion of the Children's Hospital, and also then the Sears project, the Midtown Exchange project that Ryan Companies is leading. So in the face of that investment, there continue to be great challenges, and ground zero, the central focal point, has been the Sears building, which, as Representative Clark said, has sat empty for 10 years, has been a great challenge, the state's second largest building, an historic building, with great costs in any kind of renovation.
What's the first?
IDS.
Okay.
I believe the Mall of America is largest in the state.
Mall of America. Yeah.
IDS must be third.
The infrastructure needs that I think are before you in the Sears project include the global marketplace. You'll hear more detail about that in a moment. But Wells Fargo, Abbott Northwestern Hospital, and Ryan are all privately supporting in their own grants a total of about $700,000 for the Global Marketplace project. They're doing that because they believe that this project is a critical bridge from all of these public and private investments to true economic opportunity for Phillips neighborhood and area residents. You'll hear more about how that can all happen, but it is a top priority for the partnership, and that's why I'm here before you. Over the last 7 years, as I've said, we've mobilized hundreds of millions of dollars. The Sears project represents the single most critical challenge facing us. There's great reason to believe we will be successful. There's also a great need to make sure that all of that investment lifts all of the boats in Phillips so that really the prosperity and opportunity that we're talking about in one of the state's most challenged neighborhoods can be realized. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Joanna Hicks, and I'm the Real Estate Development Director for the Neighborhood Development Center. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. NDC is the lead developer, along with the Latino Economic Development Center, the African Development Center, and the Phillips Powderhorn Cultural Wellness Center of the Midtown Global Market, an international public market located on the first floor of the Midtown Exchange that's designed to promote small businesses and create jobs in the Phillips neighborhood. In partnership with strong neighborhood organizations, NDC offers neighborhood-based training, lending, and technical assistance to residents of low-income communities of St. Paul, Minneapolis, surrounding suburbs, and greater Minnesota. Our goal is to build local economies by harnessing the entrepreneurial talent of local residents. So we work in collaboration with local groups to train in 20 different communities, including two rural neighborhoods, and five different languages, including English, Spanish, Hmong, Oromo, and Somali. The entrepreneurs in these communities face daunting barriers to success, including lack of education, language difficulties, cultural barriers, and poor credit histories. In the past 11 years, we've trained over 2,300 people, many in their own language. And of those 2,300, over 80% are low to moderate income, 80% are people of color, 39% were either underemployed or unemployed at the start of the training, and almost half have either a high school education or less. Our experience has shown that for many of these individuals, especially immigrants, entrepreneurship is a critical path towards entering the economic mainstream. And we've had tremendous success. For the past 11 years, We've made more than $1.5 million worth of small business loans. We offer more than 3,000 hours a year of technical assistance, and we've created 4 business incubators housing more than 90 businesses. We have 435 alumni who are currently in business, and they employ 1,200 people. Most of those jobs go to residents of their own communities. These businesses return nearly $18 million every year to their communities in the form of payroll, taxes, rent, and other purchases. In the Mercado Central, which is a Latino business incubator with 52 businesses in South Minneapolis, we offer, in partnership with our local neighborhood partners, affordable rents, quality space, and ongoing technical assistance. Because of what we offer, the business success rate, you know, the number of businesses that have survived for 5 years or more, is 80% in that incubator, compared to the national average of 20%. In addition, 30% of those tenants have either expanded their businesses or opened second or third locations. The business owners are sending their kids to college. They're improving their homes. They're saving for retirement. We serve as community role models on neighborhood boards, volunteering at schools, and starting Latino scholarship funds. And the Mercado's example is forging the next generation of small business owners. Employees at the Mercado are now translating their experience as employees into starting their own businesses in communities as far away as Owatonna, Faribault, and Northfield. Building on the success of the Mercado Central, NDC and its partners are going to operate the Midtown Global Market as a business incubator with training, lending, and technical assistance programs. The small brochure actually explains a little bit more about the public market, but it's an international fresh food market that will have specialty grocery stores, restaurants, fresh produce, and arts. The Midtown Exchange Project offers us the opportunity of building a bridge between the residents of these distressed neighborhoods and the larger regional economy. It's modeled after very successful national examples of public markets, including Pike Place in Seattle, Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia, both of which create jobs, incubate small businesses, and serve as regional draws to thousands of customers every day. We estimate that there will be between 250 and 350 jobs within the market. In addition, we expect an economic return to the state. We estimate $1.4 million in annual payroll taxes, over $1 million in annual sales taxes, and almost $100,000 in property taxes. And at that rate, the $5 million investment by the state would be paid back in a little over 2 years. The Midtown Exchange provides a unique opportunity to create assets and wealth among our entrepreneurs by connecting them to new customers and to new markets. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee members, good morning. It's very good to be here. I am here to talk just a little bit about the people in the Powderhorn and Phillips area. We are people.
Could you give your name for the record?
My name is Atum Azahir. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
The people in the area want to talk a little bit about mobilizing. We hear the word mobilizing the economic partnership, but we're talking about mobilizing the energy and spirit and inspiration and motivation of the people. People are looking forward to taking care of themselves and participating in mainstream in a very different way. They want very much to work with the 1,000 employees that are coming in with Abbott, with Alina. They want very much to start businesses and to see their children watch them as they make a contribution again through the talent and skills that they have that they start their businesses with. These are people who for a very long time have been looking at this hole that Sears left, and it was a dark hole. They saw the crime grow because the hole was so dark that it attracted other dark elements in the area. These are people who have heard stories about themselves in the national news. There are people who have said, don't we have more to offer than what the general public thinks we have to offer? These are people who also are wanting to rid them, their own minds, you know, of the fear of crime and the fear, you know, of their brothers and others who are doing this kind of crime that's crime on black on black crime and other kinds of crime that our people are kind of committing against themselves. These are people who are looking forward to participating in a very, very different way in mainstream society. We think that this Belleville Marketplace gives us an opportunity to do that. These are, many of the people who will be in the businesses are first-time business owners. They will have gone through training to learn how to develop a business plan. They will have taken ideas that they've had inside of themselves for a long time and put it on the ground. They will be working with very old business owners in the area. There are some small business owners that have been there for 75 and 80 years, and these are small businesses and new businesses who will be joining forces with the older and learning how, again, to really make a contribution in a very different kind of way. I think finally I want to say that when I was coming, I called a few people because I knew I'd be nervous and not know what to say. And so I asked a few people, well, what do I say when I go before the committee? And they wanted you to know that they are here with us in spirit, and that even if you don't see them, that they are here. And what they really, again, want to do is present a very different picture of the Phillips area. The Phillips area, the Powderhorn area, is people who want to take responsibility for themselves, people who want to develop and to build businesses that will then again contribute to the broader society. And so those are the words that they gave me to say. And again, we thank you very much for having us here this morning.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller Walker, I'd like to say a couple of words. I wanted to indicate that we also have Councilmember Robert Rillivan here in the audience, and Mayor Archie right back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Walker.
Thank you. Just to note a few different things. Karen stated this is the border of our two districts. Lake Street is the border of our two districts. And Phillips has been the focus point of the conversation, and Mother Toon just brought in Powderhorn. But the other neighborhood that is another player is the Central neighborhood, and I actually represent Central and Powderhorn. If you drive down Lake Street and get, you know, just from St. Paul going all the way to the lake, you'll see different holes that need to be revitalized, and then you'll see this great opportunity for you to stop and shop and eat, because individuals have invested a lot of time and energy in redeveloping Lake Street. However, right when you get to about Lake and 11th, Lake and 12th, to Chicago, there's this hole. There's a couple people that have invested. We have a Foot Locker now, and if you would have asked a couple individuals in the neighborhood just a few years ago, would you ever imagine Foot Locker coming on Lake Street? They would have said no. And so when they decided to invest in the neighborhood, and partly because of what's coming with the new site at Sears and the opportunities that individuals will have to come, shop, spend money, I have to use that word again, in their time. But the other thing to note is there are many individuals in both of our districts that want to work, want to prefer to work in their neighborhood and invest in their neighborhoods. However, there aren't as many job opportunities in South Minneapolis that are in particular, you know, being able to own your own business, being able to start in a lower level and have opportunities for advancement that we would like. And so this is an opportunity for many of the individuals to learn how to develop a business, learn how to start at the bottom down and work on the way up. So we're hoping that each one of you guys, even though this is going to be laid over for consideration later, I'm hoping that members do take in the time to come by. We can set up some tours for those that are interested in coming by and invest in Minneapolis.
Is 31st and Irving in your district?
No, that's Representative Frank. I'm actually in the middle, Mr. Chair, of all of the South Side representatives, so I'm South Central.
Okay. Anyway, Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a question for all of you. You know, it's I'm new to this committee. I struggle with this a little bit.
Isn't it?
I'm a suburbanite. We have projects going up. Of course, right and left, I have a new, brand new shopping center going up in my district, and of course, it's all funded by a private developer, and yes, all those suburbanites are probably going to go there and probably work there too. And so it's so interesting when you take, you know, my area and then you come to your area and how you generate jobs and how you lift people out of poverty. And I really think this committee is about making a better Minnesota, and I and something we now have is MTIP, and we have all those human services needs. And if you can comment on, I mean, the real overbroader thought here is if we could solve poverty, obviously, and people getting jobs and get everybody educated, we wouldn't have to have MTIP, you know, and we wouldn't have to have these things. And I think that a project like this could help that. But can you talk about, I'm really interested in, you know, long term, if you did all this, it would save the state money because you are going to have people working and investing back in their communities and being able to afford college and all of that. So that's a big, big question, but is that what's going to happen here? And what is it going to change the fundamental face of, if I'm not, that is the most poverty-stricken area in the state, right? Is that going to help,
no.
Checkamos help lift folks out of poverty, and are we going to see a change then maybe in our MFIP and other demands?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think you're asking a great question. I'm sorry, I'm Mayor Ryback from Minneapolis. Mr. Chair, Representative, you're asking a great question, and the good story we have to tell is already well underway. A decade ago, you could have said about this neighborhood that this was a neighborhood where state services, MFIP, was certainly putting tremendous resources, where very little, relatively, was coming back to the state. That's changed radically. No other neighborhood in the state of Minnesota is creating more jobs than this. $500 million of investment is going on right now. And what's happened is that the city of Minneapolis has stepped up and put a lot of money on the plate. I mean, this project alone is a $180 million project. And in funding and financing, the city is putting $40 million on the table on this. What's important about that, too, is that it's also leveraged tremendous private investment. Abbott Northwestern's, the people who worked at Abbott Northwestern used to come from a much wider area. Now, because of the Health Careers Institute and many other issues, they're creating jobs there, which has led to housing changes, and all of this is happening. What's unique about what we're asking here is not for the state to play a major role in all of that. The city, the county, private sector have already put a tremendous amount in, and all that money is coming back. What we're asking here is a very specific thing. We're saying there's an entrepreneurship opportunity for immigrant groups especially for those who can create ownership, that can create more money, to be part of this entrepreneurship market that will pay back. Foot Locker is a good thing, but what's more important is turning Asada across the street, which is a local owner, and all the folks in this global market who will be the entrepreneurs who are going to fuel the state for the next generation. You bet this will mean that there will be fewer people who will need the healthcare needs of the state, which is obviously one of the largest issues that you face. But it's also going to be flat out, as I think you were talking about, within a three-year period of time, if you just took the payroll taxes alone on global market, it would pay back this $5 million. But it's going to ripple through the economy in many other ways. The great story of this area is already underway. We're asking you to play a part in a very specific area that will have a very specific impact on entrepreneurship, which will ring true for many generations, I think.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the comment. Just a quick follow-up. I, you know, the longer we're here, we become a little more jaded, I think. We know that. And I hope so. I mean, I hope all of that happens because I really think we could solve some of those. You know, and the governor talks about this. I mean, I was at a speech where he said, kind of blamed Minneapolis, you know, about for the costs of all those human service costs and things. And I, and you know that. And if you, so this is very, very, very promising. And I just hope we track what it's actually doing. And I think it would be a great investment.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, while I would disagree with the governor on that point, I would have to say the governor has been a partner with us, as has Commissioner Kramer, in looking at this entrepreneurship. In fact, he and Commissioner Kramer were right across the street from this site about a year ago, kicking off what's called the Banking Careers Institute. As Lewis mentioned, the Health Careers Institute, the Banking Careers Institute is also part of this entrepreneurship. We have a group called Faith in the City, a group of Lutheran-based organizations who I'm working with a few blocks away on Franklin Avenue that's looking at financial literacy issues, and so they're putting money in. So it's the faith communities come to the table, too. This is similar to what the entrepreneurship programs that are taking place around the state, and I think we're not only creating a great model, but we're creating individuals who can help play that role around the state, too.
Mr. Chair, just one quick follow-up.
Got one more bill to go, yeah.
Okay, one just quick one. No, I was at a, and I just want to mention this, because I was at a talk where the governor said if the human services budget would be solved if Minneapolis did three things: got kids to graduate from high school, had people not marry till they were 21 and not have kids till they're 21. And so the social issues and the business issues and getting all the, you know, those things to meld, and that's on the record or I wouldn't say it, but is also taking that the next step of good jobs, good paying jobs, but that's, you know, and then there's that whole struggle with everything else that goes on in communities and how you get that all to mix. So maybe I'm saying this in the wrong committee. Maybe this should be a floor speech or something. But that's something I just think we struggle with, is trying to turn this all around so that we can hopefully move on these issues.
Well, hopefully we can change the perceptions right here.
Yes. Mr. Chair. Just briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few different things. There are some realities to those. We do have individuals in Minneapolis that have chosen to get pregnant probably earlier than they should have. We have individuals that have not graduated. I suggest each one of you, if you did not see the Star Tribune article yesterday, see Brad Dinner article showing that our Minneapolis public schools, the seven that we have, our children are graduating. We do have an alternative school system that those numbers are also counted in our graduation rate. We do have a long way to go as it relates to the disparity in the individuals that are graduating. When it comes to teenage pregnancy, Wilmer has struggles, just like Moorhead, just like Duluth, just like everywhere else. We have a larger population in Minneapolis. And last thing that I just have to note, just say, so it's on record, you know, Minneapolis, it's the chicken or the egg, which comes first? We have great services in the past that we're doing quite great work. Budget difficulties have some of the organizations struggling now. And so you have individuals that move at the entry point into the Whittier and Phillips neighborhood and now have moved out to Owatonna, now have moved out to Woodbury and working down in Rochester and things of that nature that no longer in Phillips. We have individuals, there's this big thing with Maplewood and the sex offenders. We have more sex offenders in Minneapolis because we have the services there. We have more individuals that are elderly because of the services. And so it's real easy to say and use the numbers and watch the TV about the perceptions of going on in Minneapolis, but it's a harder job to come and see what great work and commitment that the neighbors, the businesses, and the elected officials are in partnership doing.
And also, Representative Clark will invite you to her neighborhood to eat anytime.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Well, you know, I actually love that particular part of town. I do a number of I have good friends that live over there, and just so the committee understands that for some reason they're statutorily challenged, if they're a little shorter, so maybe rather than Woodbury or Owatonna, we get them up to the range so Tommy feel a little bit better.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment. We're talking again about a project that has a $180 million investment. The city's putting in about 40, and we're asking for 5 here. Just bring it back to the real numbers, and I hope everyone understands in this discussion what a good investment that would be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Clark renews her motion to have House File 343 be included in our bonding priorities, and I'll leave it up to you. We got 5 minutes left. Then we got Representative Kahn's bill. She's not able to be here today, and you were going to move that.
I'll move that, Bill. I'd like to move that, Mr. Chair. I know we have some other city council members who are here to talk.
Okay, well, we got 5 minutes, members, so if you have questions, please save them for later. Welcome to our committee. Representative Clark moves House File 201 to be possibly included in our bonding priorities. Welcome to the committee. Please give your name for the record.
Chair Gunther, committee members, my name is Paul Zerbe, and I am a Minneapolis City Council member representing the University area, Southeast. I have with me on my immediate right Keith Showquist, who is an architect, the chair of the Southeast Economic Development Committee, a committee composed of neighbors that have worked for like 10 years on this project. That includes all the areas in Southeast Minneapolis and also across the river into St. Anthony and St. Paul. Also have with me Jim Forsyth, who has been the project manager on this for more years than any of us cares to admit, I think, with our community planning and economic development. I was before this committee a year ago, and very much appreciate the chance to be back, however, briefly today. This project is a long-term project, a difficult project, but with enormous opportunities for the city, the region, and the state. And the need for public investment in this is high, but the opportunity long-term is also very high. There are a lot of things happening right now that many of the committee members, I'm sure, are more aware of probably than I. It's been designated as part of the Minnesota Biosciences Zone by the state. Mm-hmm. We're in great proximity to the University of Minnesota, and the university and the city have entered into an agreement to work on this together. It's an opportunity for us to work cooperatively with St. Paul, and we will be doing that. There is just announced the other day, the University Laboratories Center is developing its Biosciences Center, which is in St. Paul, but right at the intersection here. We've got public transportation and infrastructure needs across that area that are going to be of benefit to all of us. There are more than 700 acres of land there to redevelop. It is the last large site in the metro area, in the city, that can be developed. And it is, you've got, I think, a summary, a one-pager that has a map on the back of the infrastructure we're looking for here. And I would just call to this committee's attention, as I think I did last time, that this project will be of benefit. It will strengthen the university, help it to attract and retain people in the biosciences area, which is cutting-edge stuff, which is a real opportunity for this state to step forward, which, speaking of the governor, the governor and I are of different political persuasions, but I think this is something that we're all in agreement on, that it could benefit the entire state and enhance revenue and give us the opportunity to step forward in the front ranks of this. So with that, I'll turn it over to Keith Schoquist. And Keith is an architect. He has restored, owns, and offices in the historic Fire Station 19 in that area. He's a member and former chair of the Southeast Business Association. He's been chair of the SEED Committee for 2 years, which has been instrumental in preparing a redevelopment plan for the research park that envisions a bioscience campus with research and production components tied specifically and strategically to the university. Mr. Schoquist.
Thank you. And with the brief time that we have, I'd like to just go through a
few. Give you a name for the record.
Keith Schoquist.
Thank you.
In September of 2000, we did complete the master plan for the area, and this is a true community effort. Our SEED committee is composed of members from Prospect Park, Marcy Homes, Como, and St. Anthony Park in St. Paul, and also the two business associations, Dinkytown Business and Southeast Business Association. And we completed the master plan, and then our next step was to complete the AUAR, which is an area-wide study for the environmental and infrastructure needs of the area before development can start. And so this is the next key step in the development of this area. And as a lifelong resident of Minneapolis, I'm sure everyone is aware of the large area that this is and the strategic location. I live in South Minneapolis, and I drive to work here every day, and it is very focused in the center between Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's a desirable location for businesses to develop, but before they develop, they need the infrastructure in that area. Right now, there's virtually areas out there that have no water service, no sewer service, and we have a lot of problems with stormwater runoff and that type of thing. And anything we can do in this area would be helpful. The transportation infrastructure that is proposed in this area will be the LRT, and the university bus system is already has their quarter between two campuses in this area. And right now the city needs to move ahead on storm sewers and sanitary sewers and roads and that type of thing in this area. And the map shows the specific ones that we're looking at right now. Thank you.
I have one question, Councilman. Is there any contamination, brownfields in this area that hasn't been cleaned up? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There is, and that's been a significant problem in trying to get the area developed. It is also an opportunity to get rid of those brownfields, to clean them up. And there are, one private developer has recently obtained a John Wall or Wall Companies, who's got a, they've got a small tract in the center of this, recently obtained a substantial grant from the Metropolitan Council to do some cleanup. That is a significant problem. The university, as you may know, at the western end of this is looking at possibly siting a stadium there. There is pollution involved there. They don't know exactly the extent of that. They're looking at that. So that's a long answer, but yes.
Thank you. And members, like I said, this is a very important project. And brownfield cleanup, we do have money in the redevelopment account. Hopefully we'll have that in the bonding bill pretty soon. That is for the specific purpose of cleaning up areas. And there's money earmarked for both Greater Minnesota and the metro area that will be used to take care. And this is the only way Minneapolis and the entering suburbs can get more land to develop to become taxable land and productive land. So very important to consider those things in the future. And with that, Representative Clark renews her motion to have House File 201 be included in our bonding priorities, and we thank you very much. We're sorry we don't have a lot more time. I have more questions, and I appreciate your being here. And Mayor, this was your day, in this committee at least. With that, members, thank you very much. Monday, I'd like to remind everybody, Monday, because we have so many more bonding hearings to have, Monday at 9 o'clock in room 10, we will meet again. Wish we didn't have to meet on Mondays. Hopefully, this will be the last time. But we appreciate your indulgence, and with that, we adjourn.